Jackson trying to escape and run for it, and he's got it more. Lamar Jackson down the sideline. Will they give it to him? They will. Touchdown, Baltimore.
And with 1:17 left to play on Wild Card Weekend, the Hayes in the Barn.
Oh my God! I wish you guys could. I wish we had a camera in here so you could see what we're doing. We're just a bunch of clowns in here.
How much fun is that?
All right, welcome on back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown Podcast. It is Thursday, September 23rd. My name is Jake Luke. I think I just hurt my finger somehow when I was doing the audio spike with my snap. So we're off to a rousing start here in studio with Spencer Nathaniel Schultz, who is just looking like a late 90s heartthrob right now with the beard and the hair going. And everyone's, I don't know if I'd say favorite Canadian, but he's got to be within many people's top million Canadians. It's Cole Jackson.
He's one of the 5 points of the Leaf.
Norm MacDonald, you know, it got it. Michael J. Fox, they've got to be in there, but he's maybe in the conversation at or below them.
I could see that. There's no way I top Norm MacDonald. That man is a national treasure, and he will be deeply missed.
He will.
There's no doubt about that.
There is no doubt.
I should have put on this shirt as Frank's, and that would have been just the perfect start to this podcast.
We're going to, at some point, this podcast is going to devolve into the moth joke with me just, you know, reeling you two unsuspecting Schwaldos in. But no, it's not that, at least quite yet. We wanted to hop in here, Spenny and I. The recap show on Monday of the Kansas City game was a good one, I think, from an emotional perspective, but I don't think there was a lot of space, a lot of room for us to really kind of step back and break down the game from a more schematic X's and O's perspective. And listen, when you go to the game,
or a more sober perspective.
I was dancing around it, but thank you. That was probably the most lit I think that I've been. I think you probably had a few. You were in the car as well. So
the draft 2 years ago, or maybe not this draft, the 2020 draft, we were pretty banged up.
We were banged up for this draft too, but that was like a marathon. That was a marathon kind of live stream thing. So yeah, there's been many. I remember I did Purple Patio after a Bengals game 2 years ago in our first season. And that was I don't even know if I remembered recording that like the next day. So I was like, all right, well, I'm never going to listen to this because I don't want to hear what I have to say. But yeah, that was an all timer, and it was an all time game. So I think it was appropriate that we get a little tuned up and have fun with it. So we did that, but we've also had some time to since then digest the game, which was an all timer, and we wanted to hop in here and break it down a little bit. So we brought Mr. Jackson in, and we've got Mr. Schultz here to lend some great tape watching perspective, and a tape watching perspective that is afforded because they are two scumbags with VPNs, and I am not.
as if you can't. All right, you can't afford it. Yeah, Jake,
I can. I'm just too lazy. I'm too lazy. I'll say.
Yeah. But yeah, let's duet. Let's start with the offense and the offensive line. And I mean, it was a shocking performance. In going back through, I thought it was just Alejandro Villanueva was moving like a literal bear at 6'9". And it was just an all around really solid performance. Cole and I have chewed on it a little bit, but Cole, I mean, opening thoughts, what did you see from Greg Roman that you thought aided this offensive line? That's where I want to start.
We talked about it last week when I hopped on, and I think I mentioned it on, I was on a couple podcasts last week, and I mentioned on every single one, it was, they returned to more option concepts. You know, the Veer returned, they used the counter bash 5 or 6 times, it looked like anyway. And just, you know, that gives a huge advantage to the offensive line. When we talk about how is the Ravens scheme offensive line friendly, it's things like that. It's things that are going to cause misdirection. We've seen this year has been weird, and Mike Crawford is charting the run game again this year, and I have no idea what he's charting. Some of these plays where they have just the strange, they had one where they zone blocked right, but it was a veer to the left. And they're just using the offensive line for misdirection. And so that's messing up the linebacker keys because they're going to start reading guard gaps or, you know, if the Mike linebacker has B gap read and that gap's moving right, but they're reading to the left. It's just been, you know, for as much crap as Greg Roman takes, he's not getting enough love for how much he's doing with the run game design. Like the misdirection, the double pullers, a lot of GT pulls,
pin and pull. There was a good bit of pin and pull in this one too.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, trying to get the ball out to the edge. And I think that's going to help because it's going to loosen up the inside a little bit, which is going to help those dives when, and one thing I've noticed through two games is, the box hasn't been crazy stacked, not like what we saw early last year. So I think that's because they're trying to protect the edges. And, you know, that's why I'd like to see, a little bit more inside zone where they can kind of, you know, run the ball up the middle and combo into the linebackers. That's where
Latavius Murray's touchdown came on, was IZ.
It was split zone. Yeah, they had a slice blocker, but it was inside zone blocking. I mean, same thing. It's just tight.
It was split zone. Yeah, you're right.
It's the same thing, though. It's the same blocking concept. And they had another big one that they launched in week one off of inside zone. So, I mean, it's going to work. I tweeted about it as soon as it happened because I was fired up because, you know, I saw the inside zone blocks and I put
Tyson Williams run with IZ, right?
Yeah. And the what was the other one? I think it was Murray's touchdown. You know, I gave Powers a lot of love for it in my left guard breakdown video because, you know, he didn't drive block Nandy or anything, but he got enough on him and he dove and tried to finish at his knees just to, you know, Nandy couldn't make a play on Murray and it gave him that edge to sneak into the second level and get into the end zone. So, you know, I think those guys, that's one thing Ben Powers does well is his timing coming off combination blocks and his ability to get into the second level is, you know, very, very well done. And it's, you know, probably his number one area for where he's bringing value to this offense.
Yeah, he definitely has been trying to finish in the run game. And you and I have joked about how ironic it is. I think we might have even last week because it was night and day at Oklahoma. He was this great pass protector. Now he's turned into this kind of smaller, maybe a little tiny bit limit, or, you know, he's a little bit limited, but turned into kind of a mauler and a finisher, which is just really ironic. I didn't really see that out of Ben Cleveland either as a finisher. I think that hasn't flashed yet. Maybe we'll see it sometime soon. But you were talking about the options. So the Ravens ran, I believe, 14 different option runs in this game. And against Las Vegas, they ran, I think, 8. So the Ravens really did gash them. They had gains of 31, 9, 9, 21, 6, a Lamar Jackson touchdown from 2, 8, 9, 9, another Lamar Jackson touchdown in this game there, and then a couple stuffs. So a lot of them were on first down, it looks like. It looks like at least 8 of them were on first down, a couple on third down, not really a ton on second down. So Roman was starting, you know, those 4-play sequences, 3-play sequences with a ton of option. And I thought the Chiefs were really undisciplined, to be honest, as well, which was pretty shocking. And you did mention a lot of false pulls, you know, Bash is going to do things like that. But the Chiefs have seen it at this point 3 times previously. And it was pretty awesome in one way, but also strange for the Chiefs. You got to know, think Steve Spagnuolo is really disappointed. And again, it's like trying to, you know, Lamar Jackson's trying to catch a fox in the open field. But at the end of the day, they would have multiple instances where both an end and a backer would both crash on Lamar Jackson instead of being able to surf and, you know, limit it. So it was pretty devastating for the Chiefs front. And I thought that the Ravens offensive line did a great job pacing their option in this game. They're a lot cleaner. Their split stayed together. Their opening steps came out very well. They were super in sync, which was shocking considering, you know, three new guys at different positions, 2 new players on the field. So that was really awesome. I thought Patrick McCary, I need to say McCary. It is McCary, not McCary. Patrick McCary was dynamic with mixing up his hand usage with kind of flashing some hands. I thought he had really quick hands. He did a good job keeping guys within his limited striking range, I thought, as well, and pass protection. And it was a lot of fun to watch. This offensive line was a lot of fun. Bradley Bozeman was just rock solid, man. Rock solid all the way through. His angles, he was not letting guys split him in half. He was not letting guys win to a side. He did a great job mirroring. He did a great job staying under control, but also having a little bit of urgency to him.
It's just been rock solid. And it's, you know, he's not drive blocking guys. He's not, you know, doing anything flashy. It's just
he's not mowing guys' forehead off the ball.
Every rep is consistent, though. He doesn't lose ever, it seems like. And that's kind of, you know, I tweeted about it a couple days ago. I was like, you know, I feel bad because Bozeman's playing so good and I haven't really done any work on him. But there's not a whole lot to show. It's just him doing his job over and over again, which is that's what you want, especially from a guy that's going to come in and stabilize the middle of your line. So, you know, it stood out to me big time.
So against the Chiefs, PFF had him for two pressures, a combined six lost pass block reps. They cleared the way for the running backs, average of 3 yards before contact for the running backs, 24 carries. And I think Lamar actually might be in there as well. So I'm curious. I'm glad you brought up McCary. And to an extent, we've talked about Villanueva. I hate to use the word sustainable. That feels like it's been such a hijacked word when we're talking about this offense. But to what extent, with Ronnie Stanley being out of the picture, A, how sustainable is it for the next couple of games? And then what kind of decisions do you guys at this point think is going to have to be made when Ronnie Stanley comes back?
It's a good question on McCary, because any defensive player that can study him is going to see kind of how he's going to win. And the other thing that I thought he did, and it stood out when I was doing, when I was clipping plays, because you have to time, you know, you try and time it so that you don't have this 2 second lead up. If you pause it right when the ball is snapped, and it's so easy to tell because it's coming out of pistol or shotgun, so you can literally see the ball in the air, first guy off the line every single time is McCary. And that is so important because, and I mean, it stood out on broadcast where I was a couple of times like, how did he not get called for, you know, getting off the ball too early? But he needs those little advantages. If he doesn't get those, you know, if he's not to his spot that much quicker because of...
He's got to do all the little stuff perfect.
It has to be perfect. And so when you talk about sustainable, when it comes to right tackle and what do we do when Stanley comes back, I do worry about it. I think you can live with McCary as your if he's got to play a couple games, if he's got to come in during a game, he's going to do just fine.
He's a great spot starter. But like you mentioned, Cole, you mentioned how you can study him, notice his limitations, and then probably, you know, a TJ Watt's probably going to go beat his ass.
I'd be worried about like some of those crazy long athletes that he's going to – he just has no margin of error. And that's what has always pissed me off with the arm length, you know, stuff that's out there is we don't talk about it in the right context. We talk about it as if it's this thing you have to have success. What it actually is your margin for error. It's your, or an upper hand, you know, it's a tool in your toolbox that you still have to know how to use, but it's going to do things like limit your margin for error. So if you shoot your hands out and you have your timing off, and I mean, go back and watch Villanueva's 37 inch arms. He was shooting his hands way too early against Crosby. And we talked about it, Spencer, like, he was doing those hezzy moves to try and maintain space.
He wasn't using it as margin for error. He was letting go of his margin of error, essentially giving up his length immediately and getting rid of that. I'll make the comparison that's probably more digestible. It's like a corner who runs a 4.5 versus a corner who runs a 4.3. The corner who runs a 4.3, Chris Westry, that's why he's so enticing as a cornerback.
Yeah,
because he can recover, because he can run a 4.3. Is he technically refined? Hell no. Xavien Howard runs a 4.5. He can make guys not run a 4.3. But you've got that margin for error, and it does help you have those higher-end reps when you make mistakes. It helps you counter. It helps you recover. It helps you eliminate error after you've already made a mistake.
Exactly. And that's it. I mean, we saw it from Cleveland. PFF didn't chart him for a pressure, but it's in the breakdown I did. It's a pressure. I mean, Lamar had to step up into the pocket because of the pressure that came from Cleveland. He set inside on a guy and he just happened to shoot outside and he just didn't move his feet, but he turned and he hit him with a punch and it pushed the guy right back out. So that's another margin for error. If you have that brute strength, that's your margin for error. So it's not like he's strong. That's obviously important, but he still has to use his length. He still has to hit his punch. But when he loses like that, he can give guys a pop and it gives him a margin for error. That's what all these types of measurables do. Same thing with speed. Yes, you're fast. You can catch up. You can recover. But, you know, if you can't use that speed, how many guys have we seen run a 4.3, 4.4, but not play like it, right? Like there's plenty of guys. So it's the same concept. It's you put these tools in your toolbox, but you still have to pull them out, use them. And that's where I think measurables and all that kind of crap that gets kind of thrown around. And you see it from guys, especially with O-line. Like Duke Mayweather tweeted Rashawn Slater today with the lowercase, uppercase with arm length. And it must drive these guys that are actually, you know, coaching in the field type deal. It must drive them crazy to see that type of discussion because they know what it's like to try and equip a player with those tools.
Spot on. Yeah, blown blocks in this one from SIS. Zeitler was the only one who had two. They just had Bozeman with one, Powers, Villanueva, Cleveland, and Ricard all with one. In the passing game, there were only three, which is really encouraging in 28 pass snaps. So no one's getting beat up at all. The one player, before we move on to some other positions, that I had a lot of fun, he only played nine snaps, but he was playing in that jumbo role, that tight end move, tight end role, was Tristan Colon. TCC, Colon Castillo. I think he dropped the Castillo off his jersey. I don't know.
Yeah, he's just Colon out there right now, which is kind of sick.
He's just got fun energy to watch. I like to watch him. He's not, you know, playing at a super high level or anything.
Put him out there on the last play, the fourth down, right in that big jumbo package.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That package was nuts.
That was sick.
They had the unbalanced line.
Twice in this game.
Yeah. And they had the unbalanced line, and they had, what was it? They had Makarian at left tackle, Villanueva at the first tight end spot, Colon at the second tight end spot, and Tomlinson at the third tight end spot. Andrews is over at right tackle. So Ricard was set up. Everyone knew where the ball was going. And that play was important to me. I tried to highlight it because Zeitler hitting that block, it just shows like what a veteran playmaker can come in here and do. I'm not going to say that, you know, if it was last year, the right guard would have missed it, but you know, you just trust them in these types of high leverage situations. It's what vets bring. It's what Sammy Watkins brought a couple of times in this game with, you know, some bigger catches, even after that one drop he had in the second last drive, the 16 play drive. But, you know, he made a couple of big catches, and that's a spot where the Ravens have struggled, right? So those veteran playmakers, that's where you really need them to come in and get the job done.
Spot on. Someone who really impressed me in this game, despite a fumble, was Tyson Williams. I'm liking what I'm seeing. I'm loving it. He's setting up blocks, man. He's setting up blocks really well. Lamar is setting up blocks in this game as a runner insanely well. I think the Ravens really embraced the hell out of Lamar running the ball for this game in a way that it felt like they were hesitant to do against the Chiefs in the last couple of matchups. And it's kind of this, you know, chip on your shoulder, throw the ball a little bit. They did throw the ball well after the two big mistakes that happened, or, you know, really one gigantic mistake in that second interception. But I felt like they just truly embraced their identity for the first time, had confidence. Maybe that has something to do with the crowd a little bit and being at home in prime time and actually having the, you know, the energy of it. But they just really embraced their identity. They embraced what Greg Roman is great at, it felt like. Yeah. And you see guys like Marquise Brown getting fired up over a big run from a heavy, heavy package. It was a real, real, real team effort. You could just tell going back through, seeing some odds and ends, guys were blocking their asses off on the perimeter. You know, Tyson Williams was setting up runs really well. He had on the run he fumbled, he perfectly used leverage to wash out a second level defender, set up his block so well. Who was the DB who forced this fumble? Was that L'Jarius Sneed, maybe?
Might have been Thornhill. I'm not totally sure, though.
One of those guys. But they made a – I mean, should you – can you protect the ball better? Sure. Dude put his helmet on the ball. If you put your helmet on the ball, it's going to come out.
He punched it. He uppercut it, too. It was kind of like, you know, it. Yeah. I hate to be the guy that's like, you can't blame him, but you kind of can't. And, like, you know, it is what it is. But he's looked really good, I think. 10-plus yard runs per PFF. And, like, what stands out to me – from being at the game and then rewatching just the TV package, it's not seamless like to Dobbins in the passing game, but like he looks really impressive coming off those swing passes and just catching them in stride and just doing what he has to do to get forward for 10 yards, find the sticks. He just looks like a really smart, stable running back, which that was pretty much all you could ask for. He has that plus the explosiveness that you're hitting on. So I'm liking him a lot too.
That's the thing for me is like, if we go to last year's three, it's kind of like you got the speedier kind of dynamic guy in Williams that was Dobbins. I mean, it's like the poor man's 2020 running back group. Like Dobbins is Williams, Gus Edwards is Murray, Hill is Freeman, where he's got that kind of, you know, Freeman's actually done pretty well. He's got that speed that he's using in a limited opportunity. He had that huge run last week off of the sweep.
Which, by the way, being in the stadium, none of us had any idea who that was. We were like, who was that? Like, we had no idea. And then I think, like, you know, a couple series later, it's like, that was Devontae Freeman. I was like, oh, I didn't even know he was active today, but all
right. And that was Justice Hill, right? Like, it was, you know, he would come in and have a play a game where he would kind of, you know, do something that was nice. And that's all they need from him. And so I think what I'd like to see them do is, I think Williams is the more dynamic runner. Murray's going to be great downhill, and he's going to do some good things like we've seen. I mean, I think he's got a touchdown on both, right? So that's obviously important, converting in the red zone. I thought he followed, Murray followed his block really well. He kind of paced a slow for Powers to make that block, and then he just accelerated through the, I guess you call it the third level in the red zone, but he powered through the safety into the end zone. So that was a veteran run to me. I thought Williams did a really good job on the fumble as well. AV launched that run. He got there on that. They're hitting down blocks on a power, and I don't know how he reached that. Like, that was ridiculous. And he collapsed.
He was moving.
He was moving. And that was what I was complaining about with him, is he was moving too fast, and he'd just get kind of upright, and then he wouldn't be able to get back in his shoot. But he got there, he got low, and he got it done. And even credit Powers on that run too. I mean, I don't think his man would have made a play on the ball, but he finished his guy. He took him right to the ground. So when you see both your left guard and your left tackle at the end of the play over top of their guy, on what should have been a running back, you know, touchdown into the end zone that turned into the fumble. But, you know, that's what you want to see, right? That's your left side of your line running a power down blocking power football. And I completely agree. They returned to power football. It felt like we went out there and exerted our will on the Chiefs front. And like, I thought Chris Jones looked, that was the worst game I've personally watched Chris Jones play. They just toyed with him. And that's why I'm not that concerned about the Lions.
He was getting hit from every which way. He had no clue where combos were coming from.
No.
And the game to me, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he can't play the veer. Like, he can't. Like, when the dive and the sweep are on the same side and he's the read man, it's literally whatever. It's like playing a video game where you see the guy go that way, so you hit the button and he hands it off. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, he feels to me like just a quick note, he feels more of like a proactive player than a reactive player in that sense, which some guys are, and that's okay. But like, the game overall to me, it just felt like a pure distillation of what Greg Roman does really well, to the point of like, the left side of your offensive line being downfield. Like, one play that I always think about, I don't know if you guys remember this, the 49ers Saints game from like 10 years ago, like that end of the game sequence where Alex Smith had the long rushing touchdown. And like, I always remember like the first time I like thought of Greg Roman and what defined him was Joe Staley was like 30 yards downfield blocking. They had like a crackback block from a wide receiver, just doing crazy shit in the run game. So just the fact that he stuck with that, and he just stuck with it through the entire game, no matter what. He didn't like, you know, panic and get into like, we have to pass on every play, every series, just to kind of keep up with these guys. And even after the interceptions, that kind of stuff, while you technically still are chasing, he just did it doing what they do well. And that's what kind of a lot of really smart people have said, is, you know, they stuck to their run game pretty much right down to that last drive, where I think it was like two passing plays were called. I think maybe it was one completed pass and Lamar flipping into the end zone. So I loved what I saw from Greg Roman as well.
Yeah, and I think something else has stood out to me that I didn't think got talked about enough, or at least I didn't hear it, is, you know, despite them, and I haven't looked at, Sharp always tracks the personnel usage. I'm assuming it was relatively heavy, not a lot of 11, but I don't know for sure, so I'll have to double check that. I don't know if SIS has that, but it seemed like they used heavier personnel, but they were still getting targets out to the wide receiver group. And I think that's something that the Ravens, and I mean, it's like Marquise Brown is separating like a magician this year. Like, you know, and Lamar, we hit Hollywood on that comeback. We hit route. Like, the ball's getting pushed to the sideline. So even if the Chiefs defense is trying to adjust, this is where the efficient passing game has to keep them honest, push the ball outside and force the defense to adjust. And that's where I thought was the difference between, you know, the last couple of years, is they haven't been able to capitalize on those opportunities, but they did in this game, in the pass game, with their wide receivers.
For sure. I really like what I saw in terms of utilizing the backs in reads, in actual like 1-2 same side, like level reads, where, for instance, I believe it was a third down late in the game, and they create force defenders against zone that are having to pick their poison, where you're basically running Mark Andrews. A lot of the time it's a tight end and a back on the same side. You go trips on the other side. Something like that happened a couple of times. And you're using Mark Andrews and Tyson Williams spaced very wide. You know, spacing was key in this game, I thought, in a lot of the passing concepts of the Ravens. And you're basically having Mark Andrews run to the sticks and Tyson Williams run to the flat and making an easy read on one defender for Lamar Jackson. They ran it to the left side of the field a ton. They used a lot of those similar kind of level reads. And he was able to, you know, one of them, that's where Andrews kind of had that sliding catch for the first down.
Yeah.
That was a really beautiful play design. We also just saw Lamar getting the ball to Tyson Williams a couple times there. Very quick, just very quick, reading it beautifully and getting it out. So it was a lot of fun to watch. I thought the spacing was really strong from what I saw in terms of the receivers reading the defense together. And that's kind of always what one of the qualms that I have when people and you know, sometimes people who probably are right, maybe I'm wrong, but this is just how I feel. Kurt Warner talks about it sometimes. So much of the routes that are run in the NFL are, you know, people think it's Madden. People think there's a play call and the receiver goes and runs the route you tell him to route or tell him to run. No, a lot of the time it is reading the defense, being on the same page as your quarterback, turning in on, running an in-breaker or an out-breaker, an option based on the leverage, not, you know, running what you're told to run. It's reading. So I thought that the receivers did a really strong job. I think that's why having someone like Sammy Watkins, that is kind of, you know, is he this crazy productive receiver? No, but he's pedigree. He's got a lot of experience. I think he's a really high IQ receiver. He does some goofy things. He drops some passes sometimes, but the spacing was just so nice in this game. And I think it made reads a lot easier for Lamar. Of course, he had plenty of time in the pocket a lot of the time. So that helps when he feels good in the pocket, but when the spacing gets jumbled up, he's such a turnover cautious quarterback that he's not going to throw the ball when the spacing is too tight. And when he does, sometimes it gets picked and then he's not going to do it again. Then there's that whole hesitation game that we're talking about. And I didn't think the spacing was great against the Raiders. So it was nice to see that. I thought it was a real nice positive. The other thing in the passing game that I was really impressed with was the way that the Ravens countered the Chiefs' blitzes. I wrote that article that was talking about how the Chiefs basically beat the crap out of the Ravens with 5- and 6-man rushes last year, especially in some key situations. And there was errors because guys weren't hot. In other words, they weren't replacing the blitzer by running a route to where the blitz came from, turning around like you see Travis Kelce do. That's why the Chiefs chew the Ravens up. Travis Kelce understands where the blitz is coming from, goes to where it came from, and sits down because that's how you beat the blitz. And I thought Mark Andrews did a really good job in this game. I thought Marquise Brown did a really good job doing that in this game. I thought the backs did a good job doing that in this game. So I was just very generally pleased with the way that the players, and it felt like the play calling to a degree, well, we won't truly know, but felt like the players did a good job reading leverage and reading space and things like that.
Yeah, so the breakdowns per sharp, 11 was 34%, which was their most by a decent margin. Next was 21 at 22%. 22 was 19, and then 12 was 6. And then just the three wide receiver 20 was 16. So interesting breakdown. And they ran, it looks like, 61% out of 11. So I find that to be kind of an interesting split.
I'm shocked.
Right. And I think that using a good bit of that is going to be key, especially when you get a guy like Bateman back, who hopefully is able to be a little more fluid, a little more in tune with what the defense is doing, things like that, but he is a rookie at the same time. Another great thing was, you know, against the blitz, so the Chiefs blitzed the Ravens on 11 dropbacks, which resulted in Lamar Jackson going 6 of 10 for 80 yards and a touchdown. Took one sack there, pressured 3 times. So, again, the Ravens just had answers for the Chiefs' blitz. I just thought it was a really smart game played by this offense and by the skill position players in terms of understanding the blitz and how to help out Lamar Jackson a lot more than they did last year.
How much are they even going to need from Bateman this year, do you think? And this is a big if, but if Watkins stays healthy, the way Brown is playing, and you've got Andrews there who's been quiet so far, but like he can go off at any point. Like, I'm kind of liking where Rashad Bateman's at right now. I feel like he might have the opportunity to learn a lot this rookie season and not have too much put on his plate.
I think this is one of those situations where it's going to, I mean, this always sounds stupid. I hate saying it, but like the production doesn't really matter. Like it's going
to
be
with this offense. Like that's something people really need to remember. And they fail to a lot of the time.
And it's kind of what happened to Marquise Brown last year. And I know Spencer fought this for all offseason, but like if you go back, you watch his tape last year, he played so well. And it wasn't acknowledged by the fan base, but also by, you know, more national folks that aren't watching every game because of the numbers. And that's fine. But what basically you need from Bateman is you need him to come in and make those plays. It's kind of those, you know, the Sammy Watkins out route to get you into what was it? I think he hit that out that set up a field goal. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yep, but yep, he did. Yep.
Yeah, I think I had it there. So it's like those types of plays, like little plays where he's going to just have a one-on-one. He's got to beat his man, make a catch, get a first down. Little things like that are going to stand out way more to me than, you know, the 60 yards and a touchdown.
And weirdly, him and Brown have both had those, but like they've had like 6, 7, 8 of them in a game, and they've added up to the point where they're both like around the 100-yard mark in the first two games so far. So it's not going to happen every week, obviously, but I'm just super impressed by what I've seen from them.
So Marquise Brown had 126 intended air yards, which was the most of any player in this game. He had 65 yards after the catch. He forced one broken tackle, which was on the left sideline, and he had picked up 5 first downs on 6 catches. His EPA in this game was 2.56, so that's very high. If you do that every game, you will just about lead the NFL in EPA, and then SIS does points earned, which is basically how much better were you than above average, and that was 4.46. Which again will lead the NFL if you post that every single week. So overall, the yak was outstanding in this game. Mark Andrews picked up a little bit. Sammy Watkins picked up a little bit. They had over 100 yards of yak there, which is just outstanding. That is the missing element. It's felt like from this offense for even going back to Joe Flacco, So it's been years, and Marquise Brown flipping that switch. I know that he talked about it post game. And kind of, it seems like he was truly playing scared from what he said. And I don't blame him with 2 screws in your foot being 170 pounds. He basically said that T. Martin and Keith Williams have told him, you're not going to get to play this game for as long as you think you do. You're going to spend most of your life not playing this game, like leave it on the field. And now we get Oklahoma Hollywood Brown as a result is what it feels like to me. I haven't seen him have so much aggression after the catch, utilizing his skill set, utilizing his quickness, utilizing his small strike range, you know, how small of a target he is to get a good shot on when he's moving at a controlled speed. And it's just really exciting to watch. And I think we're about to see a monster season out of Marquise Brown. Again, Cole, you just touched on it. I thought he was a lot better last year than people thought. I really think Lamar Jackson struggled to hit him in rhythm, especially deep. Cole and I talked about that many times. So I'm
just second play of the game on Sunday. Same as it reminded me of the first 6 weeks of last year. How many times did he just get overthrown when he's got a step?
I think to your point, Spencer, about like in the moment last year, it felt like we were getting criticism for saying that Hollywood Brown was playing well and that Lamar Jackson needed to hit him a little bit better. That's all true, but like he also didn't have a wide receiver across from him playing like he is right now with Sammy Watkins. So there's a lot of, we can talk about square peg and round hole, but there's also other external factors that are playing in right now. So it's that's looking like a dynamite signing, I think.
Absolutely. And when he was lined up in the slot in this game, let's see. So he ran 8 routes out of the slot, and that was where 5 of his catches and 117 yards came. So Sammy Watkins is playing pretty much exclusively on the boundary. He only ran 2 routes out of the slot in this game. And that is enabling him, I think, to do things like go beat the crap out of people on an RPO. And I'm just generally, I'm liking what I'm seeing. I'm liking what I'm seeing in terms of the RPOs. I've been banging on the screen drum for a couple of years now. And really, I think I'm just done with screens from Greg Roman. I don't think he likes them. I don't think he spends a lot of time on them. I think that RPOs effectively will always be better than screens in this offense from what we've seen at this point. And RPOs are absolutely baller, it feels like, in this offense. And it's just so ironic to me because everybody across all national media thinks, oh, the Ravens run nothing but RPOs. They need to run way more RPOs than they already do. Play action, RPOs. Suddenly your offense is looking like, you know, Baker Mayfield in Cleveland in a good way. And you're utilizing high percentage, high leverage, force defenders, things like that, and making it easy for your quarterback instead of making it harder. So I'm really loving what I'm seeing RPO wise. We can drop the screens. I'm done. Just do RPOs instead. I'm with that.
I think a good way to get the offense in rhythm is through the RPOs because it forces the ball out quick. And that's where I think I want to see Lamar start games better with, is getting in that rhythm quicker. And I mean, it's kind of, you say that about any quarterback ever. So, I mean, I remember you say that about Flacco. It'd be like, you know, let's get out there, let's run the ball, let's get him in a rhythm. I mean, I'm sure everyone says it about every quarterback, but I think that would help. And I think no one reads the play. It's very rare that Lamar makes a bad decision on, you know, when he's running an option concept. He reads so well. He's so
he's been running them for years. He's so familiar with them.
And so just add the P. That's all I ask. And I trust that he's going to make that right read consistently.
And we saw an absence of that decisiveness in week one. He did not play that well in week one.
So many double clutches.
He's doing all this shit. And like, it actually, weirdly, it kind of pays off with the jump pass this past week. So that's kind of an interesting sort of bow put on that whole situation. But he kind of struggled in the passing game in week one with that indecisiveness. So to your point about that kind of being like a sports talk radio take about like, oh, just got to get him in rhythm, get the ball out quick. Like, yes, that's true. But like, look how fast Patrick Mahomes gets the ball out. And like that really, really helps him. And Lamar's never going to be that fast, but kind of manufacturing that in a way and kind of helping him to do that and helping him get onto that script early, that's going to help him get into a rhythm where he's not turning the ball over early like he did this week, and you're not putting yourself into that hole.
And you get into a bit of a dichotomy where it's like, well, he was clutching the ball because he was getting pressured. And then it's like, well, you know, from my perspective, where I'm always going to look from the offensive line, it's like, well, he's getting pressure because he's not getting the ball. And it's kind of like, you know, chicken and egg, but it is tough. And it gets tough as games go on. I mean, the pass protection last week was some of the worst I've seen, like, and just in terms of guys losing one-on-one matchups. You know, if it wasn't coming from AV, it was coming from Ronnie. And it was really tough. It reminded me, I meant to tweet this out actually, starting Stanley last week, if he looked that bad in practice, reminded me a lot of starting Skura in 2020, who, like, I know they worked with that line and they threw Bozeman to center, put Makari at left guard and had Phillips at right guard the week before week one in 2020. And they decided to go to roll the ball with Skura's health. And, you know, it seemed kind of similar to the Stanley situation, but, definitely. You know, nonetheless, you know,
need the more line rehab, man. He's not flexible enough and he doesn't feel confident.
Yeah, and it's, I'm sure there's a huge mental toll going on there too. So it's you know, I saw someone saying that because he hurt his left ankle, he might try the right side, but then your drive foot is your left foot. Anyway, and like, it doesn't make sense. I don't see, you mentioned it at the start of the show, Jake. There's no way they're doing that. If Ronnie Stanley's back, they're gonna wait till he's healthy. He's gonna go back to left tackle. I think it's a 0% chance he moves to the right side.
I mean, his leg was in pieces.
He's the only one who hasn't played there at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and like, that's just not what he is. Like, to get in the whole, like, you know, I hate to do the whole pride thing with Orlando Brown Jr. He probably does take pride in being left tackle Ronnie Stanley. And like, you know, that might not get to a point where if the roles were reversed, he would ask for a trade or anything like that. But it's just like, he's like, I'm a left tackle. It's not like, let's not mess around with this. I'm just going to play that and we'll figure something out with AV or McCary or if we have to platoon there. But yeah, they also shouldn't rush him back either. I mean, like, his leg was in pieces less than a year ago and he's still coming back from that. And to your point, there is a mental toll that takes on a guy as well. And if they didn't learn their lesson with Rashad Bateman and rushing him past that initial groin injury to getting hurt again, then I don't know what they were doing. And I think they did. So I don't think they're going to rush him
back. Part of that's on the player. Part of that is also on the player.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. And he probably, if he's in a bad spot mentally, I hope he's not blaming that on, you know, other people, because he probably had as much of a say. You know, he's, you know, a prideful alpha dog football player that's like, you know what, I'm going to come back, screw this. You know, it didn't work out and that's okay. Take your time, get right, get to where you need to be mentally, and then we'll get you back out there.
Sure thing. But yeah, to put a bow on the offense, I guess, you know, RPOs, three of them, would like to have seen more, but the Ravens got, let's see, a gain of 11. All three of them went to Marquise Brown, and it was 11. The slightly bad pass, I'd say, that was a little in front. It felt like the rhythm wasn't there on where Brown was supposed to kind of start to move. Then that one went behind the line for -4, and then the 27-yard gain. So you got two pretty decent chunk plays. The Chiefs ran 4 and had 27 yards. The other interesting thing, I guess we can kind of shift over onto the defensive side of the football now. Let me see here. The one of the things that jumped out to me that I didn't realize was that Mahomes throws for 343 yards. His completions were only 129 air yards, which means, you know, like two-thirds of that came after the catch, which it felt like they got some yak for sure.
How many of that came on the Byron Pringle and the Kelce touchdowns?
Yeah, that was ridiculous. 246 intended air yards total for Mahomes, so that includes incompletions as well. And just nuts, just absolutely nuts that, you know, the Ravens did what I didn't think they would do and didn't blitz at all. They rushed three and then sent a delay. They only blitzed Mahomes on, I believe, three dropbacks. And guess what? He beat them all three times. It was three dropbacks for 20 yards with negative one intended air yards. And it was gains of four on second and one, five on second and three, and 11 on first and 10. So they got a first down on each play that the Ravens blitzed. And none of them resulted in a pressure, obviously, because he just got the ball out immediately. So, yeah, not blitzing Patrick Mahomes anymore. And it felt like it really started to work. The tackling was an issue. I think that if this defense makes like three tackles on three plays, this is an entirely different football game. And the Ravens are really out ahead. So, Jake, you just mentioned that Pringle, yak gain, and the Kelce after the catch. And I think there was one from Hardman where Queen ended up switching onto him and was kind of in a good place. Hardman does a little jump cut and just blows by Malik Harrison and gets like 15 yards after the catch. So those were all definite daggers that really, 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 really hurt. And it was a really interesting game plan to go back and watch it to go down and take place and watch how many coverage defenders the Ravens had. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think Darrell Williams had one where he split it wide, had Queen on him, and he just kind of ran through Queen. I mean, it's one of those things. If you go to any youth football practice, even up here in Canada, the first thing they're doing at the start of every practice, they split into stations and you're doing blocking and tackling. And I mean, tackling is one of those things where, you know, technically these guys know how to tackle, like technique wise, a lot of it's mentality. And that's where I think, you know, guys like Queen need to kind of step up and start to bring that mentality to finish plays. And I think it was kind of what stood out the most to me on the negative side. It's just inability to finish tackles was frustrating to watch.
So Travis Kelce in this game, only 28 intended air yards and only 20 caught air yards. And ends up breaking three tackles, forcing two missed tackles, has seven catches, six first downs, gets 89 yards after the catch. And a lot of that did come on the long touchdown, but like he had double that touchdown in yak.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to give a shout out to the DBs in this game. I just think like, and I hate it, like there's no blueprint to beat the Chiefs. This is not going to be a thing where like, back in the day with the Patriots, like, oh, what's the blueprint to beat the Patriots? Well, you got to sack Tom Brady nine times. Like, that's really easy. But, like, I got to give a shout-out to the DBs and just the defense in general. But, like, just making critical plays. And, like, you can chart, like, things like money throws, for example, or, like, big-time throws. Like, I'm looking at PFF. It said Mahomes had zero big-time throws. But I'd be interested to see, like, what clutch plays from DBs that were made late in this game.
Mahomes had zero big-time throws?
Per PFF, yeah. I don't know. It said
they didn't call. That's interesting that they didn't call the touchdown to Robinson.
Yeah, I feel like that would be – they mentioned that in this write-up, so I don't know what they're missing there, especially considering the fact that he had pressure pretty much coming up in his face and, you know, he beat Marlon Humphrey, which, you know, that's another conversation entirely. But – that the breakup by Averett on Tyreek Hill, I feel like that kind of almost
third down.
Yeah, it was. It forced him off the field. You don't stop this offense. This offense just doesn't get stopped, and that's definitely like an eye test thing. But like, that's just a thing where you got to get turnovers for sure, and they got two turnovers. Big time shout out to Tavon Young for jumping on that ball, and a great job by Owe on the hurry to force it out in that way, and also obviously, you know what Owe did to force the other turnover. But I have to give a shout out to Averett, who people love to dog, but he made a massive play there.
Finally got his head around.
Yeah, he got his head around. He stuck
couldn't
with
believe it.
He stuck with Tyreek Hill step for step, and he's more of a physical kind of size kind of dependent corner, and he stuck with Tyreek Hill step for step and, just got a hand in there and popped that ball out when they needed it. So I don't know, like, what I'm sure there is some sort of like stat.
I think Averett ran a 4.36. I'm pretty sure he had at Alabama, he ran 100 meter, and I think he had an SEC
championship
finish.
He's definitely,
like,
he's an athlete.
I think he at least placed or something. Yeah. He also, another crazy play to me was, so you talked about OA and the interception he forced. So there was another play. I don't have the situation, but I have the play in front of me. OA gets chipped by, I think, Robinson. He's working on Niang. Mahomes rolls left. OA hunts him down, makes him cut back upfield. And then Elliott fills the void and hits Mahomes. Mahomes throws the ball to the right sideline. It was almost identical to the pick that Averett had. And Marlon Humphrey dove for it and was like that close to picking the ball off on the sideline. Mahomes had that play that happened on the pick two times. And I was pretty drunk last night.
People shouted like interception as that play was happening. I think I thought it was for like in the moment.
Right. Right. But that was, you know, that general game plan from the pass rush to do those things and kind of some of the plays they made on the back end, it wasn't perfect. They did let up big plays, you know, they did let up yak. Marlon Humphrey really did it. You don't know if he's expecting the deep safety to have his back there. The touchdown, the deep touchdown to, was it who caught that? Robinson?
It was Robinson, yeah.
Yeah, Robinson catches it. So Hill is lined up inside of Robinson. Hill carries like the Y cross route. And so obviously the single high safety is going to take that because you want to take that away. And then Humphrey just jumps on the out, just completely speed turned and thought he was about to walk and get an interception. And it was an out and up. Like, it was so aggressive by Marlon Humphrey, and it did not pay off. He recovered pretty well, but Mahomes is throwing that. It's just crazy that wasn't a big-time throw. Most quarterbacks, the safety would have gotten back and made a play on that ball. Most quarterbacks, I think, get back and make. If Lamar threw that, I'm pretty sure the safety gets back and makes a play on the ball.
Do you think Marlon would have snagged that interception if he had had a cup of coffee before the game?
Probably. I think so. About 100 milligrams of caffeine, Marlon.
Do for a guy like you, yeah.
Just be a little bit more in the zone, Marlon. Just a little bit more in the zone. But yeah, they effectively took Tyreek Hill out of this game. I truly think something was up with Tyreek Hill. I don't know what it was. He just did not have the juice. There was a catch early on. I think he got a first down, if I recall correctly. And he had both of his feet in bounds, and he was in a neutral, flat-footed position. Marlon Humphrey is about 5 yards away, maybe 3 yards away. And he just stepped right out of bounds. He just stepped out of bounds. Maybe football's fixed. I don't know. But
maybe he's hurt.
I was in shock to watch that. Marlon Humphrey was just looking at him, and he just kind of stepped out of bounds. I was like, wow, okay.
That might be a thing where coaches are telling them, if you see 44, do not go near him with the ball in your hand.
I don't know if you're telling Tyreek that about anything ever, though.
And also, based upon what we know about Tyreek, he might not be listening to that, but I don't know. Maybe he's hurt or something. He didn't look the same.
Could have been sick. He could have been hurt. Yeah. They did a great job. I think they did a good job taking him out of the game at points, but like they double teamed Kelsey. Like, they literally punch Gunner pressed him at points in this game. They did a good job on him. You talk about that rep from Averett. That was a great rep, but I didn't see anything really crazily favoring Tyreek Hill. I think they did a good job not blowing assignments on him and things like that. But I didn't see anything too crazy on the back. I need to watch again. I was kind of drunk when I watched this.
We do know that his feelings were hurt.
His feelings were hurt.
Yeah.
He was hurt. I mean, we're Ravens fans at the end of the day. And let me just say, for the record, the sweet, delicious tears that I have tasted on the internet from Kansas City Chiefs fans, I've been waiting so, so long.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little.
Oh, yeah. Keep that same energy. It's your Super Bowl. Kansas City Chiefs.
It's been delicious.
They literally invented the Super Bowl, or they invented the term Super Bowl. They've won
Patrick
two.
Mahomes is actually the only quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, of course. I didn't know that. They've won two Super Bowls, okay? And the Super Bowl, over 50 years of existence at this point, they've won two of them. How long have the Baltimore Ravens been around? About 25 years. They have two as well. So we can calm down with this throne of ease. Everything revolves, the entire world revolves around the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. Not this week. Every other week it does. Not right now, and you're just going to have to deal with it. I'm sorry. Next week, you're going to firebomb whatever clown show operation you're going to be playing. Sorry. everything. Just, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke it. I had to get that off my chest. This has been a terrible Twitter week for our friends down in KC.
It truly has. You hate to see it, but you love to watch it go.
You do.
Love to watch it go. Yeah, and I'm trying to pull up some coverage here. All right, so it looks like the Ravens played cover three. Patrick Mahomes has 31 dropbacks. 7 of them were cover three. Mahomes went 6 for 7 on those, 85 yards and a TD. Ravens played cover four. On 4 of them, he went 2 for 4, 19 yards and a pick. So the pick was cover four. And then let's see cover one. That should account for most of the other ones, I believe. No cover one. Wow. Interesting. And what else we got here? Cover two. No reps of cover two. I don't know what the other one is. Man two, I guess. 2 reps of man two. I don't know what the rest of them are. I guess some funky stuff, something weird. But 2 reps of man two. Mahomes goes 1 for 2, 23 yards on a 31-yard intended air yard throw there. So interesting stuff. Yeah. I mean, I thought Mahomes was great in this game for the most part. He did get away with one, and he did throw a bad pick, but it was definitely fun in hindsight to go back and see him live and then go back and watch this game. And the throw that he made across his body, it was like a 3 or 4 yard throw where he just turned and did like a little baseball flip of it. Ted and Wynn posted it in like slow motion earlier. The man can throw the ball. Truly, the platform that he throws off of is nuts, man. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, the early one where he like threw it like that might have been what you were talking about. That was one of the moments where I just sat back in my seat and just shook my head inside, and I was like, all right, what do you do? Like, what do you even do?
Yeah, no, I said he looked like he's torn his rotator cuffs, and he just doesn't feel the pain.
Yeah, I guess not.
He's just elastic, man.
He's like Carson Wentz, except it's with his rotator cuffs, and he's actually good. But yeah, it's interesting. I guess that like for an overall like meta conversation of it, it's interesting. Like he did play amazing and like they really could have, and maybe even should have won this game. And I was talking about this a little bit on Twitter, the thought experiment of like, if Dan Carlson misses that field goal and the Ravens are 1-0, they come into this game and then it plays out exactly the same, but Edwards Elair doesn't fumble and they go on to kick a field goal and win. We're in a very different place right now. And I'll just say that I'm glad it's played out the way that it has, because I feel like momentum is, as much as people want to get snarky, I feel like it's a real thing and it's going to help carry the Ravens forward here.
Yeah, and I know we're going on the road after an emotional win, and this is like your typical trap game, what it used to be, but they just don't really seem to happen with Lamar at the helm. Like I look back to that 2019 season, and I think it was like we had the Bills on the Sunday in Buffalo, and then we came home and had the Jets on the Thursday. Typical trap game, right? And they started slow, and then, you know, they settled in and they were fine. And there were a couple other in that year. And I think, you know, anytime you're 14-2, you're kind of looking for the letdown game. But, you know, it's just seemed Lamar brings a different energy to the team, and they seem, even if they start slow, they kind of recover. So I hate when I feel confident before a game, because you're just setting yourself up. But I really think we absolutely walloped Detroit this week.
They're gonna beat up on them real bad. Detroit has no secondary and no receivers.
Quintez Cephas, though, a couple good catches.
I like me some Quintez Cephas. I do. I truly, actually do. But I'm not sure what's gonna happen in terms of them being able to compete in this game. I think 8-point spread for the Ravens. I don't know how that line doesn't move. That basically says they're an 11-point favorite at a neutral site, and I don't think the fans in Detroit are going to be going too crazy for this game. So I love watching Lamar Jackson on turf. I think it is a lot of fun, and I think this defense is definitely going to be out to make a statement after in this John Harbaugh. This is the first time in the John Harbaugh era that the Ravens have allowed 30 points to back-to-back opponents to open the season, and the missed tackles were atrocious. I don't think Patrick Queen was nearly as bad as what his PFF grade said. He did have a really spectacular play chasing Mahomes down. Mahomes basically has nothing to his right. They run a 3-man rush. Queen takes away 2 reads, and then Mahomes rolls to his right. Patrick Queen, He tries to like look back to his left and pump fake, and Queen just ran his ass down and got him out of bounds on third down. Really impressive play there. I think he missed some tackles. You know, definitely had a lot of bad reps. Don't think he was good necessarily, but you want to see him. You want to see Malik Harrison not having to go against Kelsey and the speed of Hardman and these crazy guys. Go get their confidence back a little bit. Go watch some tape. You know, lick their wounds a little bit, and go to work. Go prove what you can do as a defense and kind of get this defensive ship righted after probably facing two top five offenses is what it seems like early in the season.
And you get out of it 1-1. You go and play an offense that's going to be a little bit more anemic. I mean, just by design, like Jared Goff is just. He just feels like a throwback in all the worst ways. It feels like every quarterback in the league these days comes in with some form of athleticism that they can use to at least buoy themselves along a little bit. He just doesn't have any of that. So it's going to be tough against this front that we've seen. You know, the defense has had its struggles, but this front has looked long and athletic and every bit ready to take down a guy like Goff. So you'll have him, then you'll have Tiny Hands Teddy Bridgewater and the Broncos in week four. So it's an interesting like stylistic matchup of two different quarterbacks coming up, and really all four quarterbacks. Like Derek Carr is kind of different from what you typically see. Mahomes is obviously the unicorn. Goff is just kind of the weird sort of statuesque fish out of water, and then Teddy Bridgewater, kind of another stylistically interesting quarterback in 2021. So it's I'm looking forward to the next 2 weeks for the Ravens defense to, like you said, kind of turn the ship around, hopefully.
Hopefully. But yeah, I think this was a fun episode. We'll get into the lines a little bit more for the Friday episode. Cole, we love you coming on, and hopefully you'll be coming on a bunch throughout the season. We appreciate you hopping on, but I think that does it. Anybody have any closing thoughts?
Just when. That's every time I go into these games now, you know, I try not to get too hyped up. Just win. I don't even care about stats or anything anymore. Just win, and you know, give me some film to talk about. I hate left guard rotations. I think it's absolutely silly. But it gives me great content, so keep doing that too.
Well,
but thanks for having me on, boys. No, always a pleasure.
My closing thought is go for it. But before we do get out of here, Cole, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media, and you're doing a podcast, right? You know, you're getting into the game. You got a little thing going on right now, you know, jumping.
It's a little thing, a little something. Yeah, I know.
Jumping into our space here, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's not really a podcast. We kind of have separate streams. We got someone doing a defensive, you know, recap preview show, and then I'm doing the O-line film room, but trying to keep it more film focused, less podcast focused. But yeah, it's called Two Guys Watching Football over on Twitter or over on YouTube, and on Twitter at Cole Jackson FB. So that's where you can find me.
Cool. Well, thank you to lovely gentlemen for hopping on here. I think this was a really fun chat. I hope I was able to hold my own in this meeting of two.
We shot for 30 minutes and we failed.
Listen, that was never going to happen. I didn't want to tell you, but there was no chance this was going to be any less than like, and maybe I should just filibuster here for it to hit the 60-minute mark as I watch it ticking 57:08, 57:09. But no, no chance that was going to happen. And yeah, just wanted to say thanks for hopping on, guys. Hope I was able to hold my own with two film watching, analysis, what was your name? Analysis nerd boy. Two gentlemen like yourself who are extremely well-versed in the game. Hope I was able to hold my own to a certain extent. But it's fun for me to be in here and learn all the same and moderate as well. So thank you, guys. Hope you have a tremendous Thursday. Spenny, I will talk to you again tomorrow night for our preview of this coming week's game. Until then,
see ya.
Arrivederci.
Gourlami. Gourlami. Arrivederci.
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 Arrivederci. Arrivederci.